Hello, everyone. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1PLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. We'll be reading together, in digest format, World Radio Magazine, the online version, from March 2011. World Radio is published by CQ Communications Incorporated, 25 Newbridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. This recording is a production of the Courage Handy Ham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Ham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hams may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or the email address handyham@courage.org. Our website, it's updated every day, www.handyham.org. Let's begin with the World Radio Online News Front. New vanity and club call rules take effect. New rules regarding vanity and club station call signs within the amateur radio service were published in the Federal Register on December 15, putting wheels in motion for their implementation on February 14, Valentine's Day. The Federal Communications Commission announced its intention to modify Part 97 as it applies to the vanity call sign system and club station call signs in late 2009, aligning the rules to prior Commission decisions. In November 2010, the Commission released a report and order outlining its decision. Along with the changes to the call sign rules, the FCC made certain minor non-substantive amendments to portions of Part 97. That was supplied by the ARRL, the American Radio Relay League, and other published reports. VK's ready for MCOM assist in Australia flooding. Devastating rainfall in Australia's Queensland state pushed the Fitzroy River over its banks, flooding a wide region, including Rockhampton's 75,000 residents. The disaster prompted a call for radio amateurs to be ready to assist in emergency communications. According to Amateur Radio Newsline's Les Unwin, VK4VIL, Rockhampton, and District Amateur Radio Club President Jack Chumbly, VK4JRC, has a good number of club members on standby and registered with State Emergency Service and the Disaster Management Committee, with suitable equipment available for activation if the situation worsens, for relief of emergency workers, or particularly in the case of power failure. Quoting here, fortunately, amateur radio operators contacted in upstream areas have also not been called upon for assistance at this time, he reported. Now for our next online newsfront piece, alleged honeybee gunman ID'd as radio amateur. Gary Amaya, 48, KC9AWD, believed to be the so-called honeybee gunman, was shot with his own firearm while apparently trying to rob an Orlando Park, Illinois tanning salon in December, according to published reports. Last October, three men were shot, one fatally, near the Illinois-Indiana border, Amateur Radio Newsline reported. The shootings appeared entirely random. One victim, a farmer, had a conversation with the shooter about honeybees before he was shot, earning the killer his nickname of the Honeybee Shooter. 2 months later, Amaya was allegedly robbing an L.A. tan salon at gunpoint when a customer disarmed him, ultimately shooting Amaya twice, resulting in his death. QRZ.com lists Amaya's home address as being in Rankin, Illinois. We thank ARN and WB9QCB for that commentary. Also, the Chicago Tribune Online, Morris Daily Herald, CNN, and other sources. New Zealand DX Hall of Fame inductees announced. John N. Shaw, ZL1BYC, Brian Anderson, ZL2AFT, and the late Peter W. Watson, ZL3GQ, have been selected for induction into the New Zealand DX Hall of Fame. Each was chosen based on his dedication to ham radio and a furthering of the art of DX operation. The New Zealand DX Hall of Fame was established in 2009 to honor those outstanding ZLDXers and contesters who have excelled in the radio sport aspect hobby over many years. Video of Soyuz TMA-20 launch with ham aboard posted online. Video of the night launch of the Soyuz TMA-20 spacecraft carrying Expedition 26 crew members, NASA astronaut Katie Coleman, Russian cosmonaut Dmitry Kondratyev, and European Space Agency astronaut Paolo Nespoli, IC-0JPA, to the International Space Station, is posted online. This is Nespoli's second trip into space. In June of 2006, he was assigned to Space Shuttle Mission STS-120. That information came from UniversalToday.com and the ARN Newsline organization. Let's move along now to the editor's log. World Radio Online Editor is Richard Fisher, KI6SN. Thoughts on avoiding net losses and posting net gains. Does anyone keep statistics on amateur radio net activity? It would be interesting to see whether it has waxed or waned over, say, the last 100 years, minus the war years, of course. More than a few net managers have lamented lately that it's a challenge to keep participants coming back. In the pitch battle over a busy ham's spare time, it's no easy feat to keep checking in high on his or her list of priorities. Now here follow a few comments from different amateurs regarding that commentary. Mike Hare, WA6ARA of Ridgecrest, California, was looking for ideas to increase interest in a local VHF net and asked for the group's advice during a World Radio Online live internet chat in January. Quoting here, "It's an emergency net," he said. "What the group was on life support. They used to be 15 to 20 check-ins, but lately it's down to 5. The group meets on the 146.64 MHz WA6YBN 2-meter machine. It's a low-level repeater, really a translator, and you can't hear it south of Ridgecrest. We usually have a roundtable discussion, but few stick around." It was clear others on the January chat had struggled with the same situation. Ted Lubers, call K1AYZ of Tavares, Florida, suggested Mike assign a radio topic to be discussed at next week's net and appoint a moderator. My club's Wednesday night net asks a question for each participant to answer. Tim Huffnell, WA3BDV, posted from Bristol, Pennsylvania. The moderator poses the same question for everyone, not always ham-related, but fun. It's more interesting than signal reports. Nothing more boring than checking into a net, just giving your call sign and waiting for the net to close when they run out of check-ins, added Jack Shea on WM0G of Boulder, Colorado. Turn your VHF net into an informal roundtable format instead of a formal net structure. It's more friendly to attract newer hams. Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, wrote from Saugus, California, "You have to make nets interesting and entertaining to hold participants. Conducting a 2-meter net on simplex has its advantages," some chatterers say. "For income training, it's good practice in case of machine failure," WA3UVV said. Speaking of that, Kent Hathaway, K7DXP of West Jordan, Utah, had to excuse himself from the chat. "Have a local 2-meter simplex net in a few minutes," he wrote. "GN, that's good night and good hunting." How fitting. Now there's a guy with his priorities in order. If you'd like to join in on the online web chats, here's how to do it. Here's the schedule. The Sunday, March 6th session begins at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's 0100 Universal Time Constant UTC Monday. Our first midweek session will be Wednesday, April 13th at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 0000 UTC. To better accommodate our European and United Kingdom friends, the Sunday, May 1 chat will be at 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. Radio amateurs everywhere are welcome. No matter the start time, the sessions are casual and friendly. To sign up for an email reminder that the chat is imminent, you should get on your internet connection, if you have one, and go to www.worldradioonline.blogspot.com. You can see replays of all the previous chats on the site as well. And the editor's log is signed, Richard Fisher, KI6SN. Next up is our station appearance for the month, WZRAA, that's Whiskey Zero Romeo Alpha Alpha, Colorado Springs, The Beauty and the Beast. On December 2, 2010, Dick Thompson, WZRAA, could still gaze into the western sky, add a key ingredient to his amateur radio success, then crash. Quoting, "The next day, my Triesto 40-foot crank-up tilt-over tower came down in a gust of wind that was near 90 miles per hour," he said. "I have never experienced wind like that in the 40 years I have lived in Colorado Springs. It will be replaced by around 25G and a Hazer II climbing prevention tram system. The beam will be a Cushcraft A3S. He's waiting for an insurance settlement." Thank heavens I had that. The article goes on to list all of the equipment that's shown in the photograph on page 16 of World Radio Online for March 2011. He continues, "I have been licensed since the summer of 1963. He got his current call sign through the Vanity program on January 27, 2006. On May 13, 2006, I passed my extra class license test, which was a crowning achievement." Dick Thompson was also TI-5 slant WZRAA in Costa Rica, as well as a member of a team for the 2006 CQ Worldwide DXCW contest. "We operated at contest station TI-5N and had over 6,800 contacts and a score of over 9 million points. WZRAA said the TI-5 experience was the highlight of his 43-year amateur radio career. It was awesome to operate on the DX side of the fence during a contest like that. I would love to be able to do that again. I will never forget it." If you hear him on the air or see him on your computer screen, WZRAA said to give him a shout. He just loves to rag you. Well, as most of you folks know who listen to the recordings of World Radio and other magazines, we oftentimes neglect the young ladies, the YLs, in amateur radio. There are quite a few women that enjoy the hobby as well. This article is titled 2010 YLs in the News and Events to Fill the 2011 Calendar. The author here is Cheryl Muir, November 0, Whiskey Bravo Victor, and 0. WBV. After ARRL field day, summer just seemed to fly by, and then it was time for winter and lots of amateur radio. Many YLs were recognized in 2010 for outstanding contributions to the hobby, while 2011 is a year for YL events. I hope to see you on the air and around the country with all the YLs participating in ham radio. Emily Bishop, WE4M, who writes the youth column for YL Harmonics, that's the title publication, learned on August 1 that she was to receive the Hiram Percy Maxim Memorial Award presented by the American Radio Relay League each year to a ham under the age of 21 for their work in amateur radio. "I could not believe it," Emily said. "I thought it was a joke, but I was assured by Mickey Cox, ARRL Delta Division Director, that the award would be presented to me. I was overjoyed. It is an honor for me to receive the Hiram Percy Maxim Memorial Award. I will continue to work in amateur radio by spreading the word to other young hams about the joys and opportunities there are in this hobby we love so well." Congratulations, Emily, on a job well done. In 1965, Doris Cody, spelled C-O-D-Y, Victor Echo 3, Bravo, Bravo, Oscar, was a founding member of the Ontario Trilliums, and in 1967 was involved in the formation of a national club for YLs, the Canadian Ladies Amateur Radio Association, CLARA. Doris did a great deal during her lifetime to encourage YLs to be active on the air and to enjoy their hobby. She became a silent key in January 1999. At that time, Clara established in her name an achievement award to be given each year to a YL who, like Doris, made a significant contribution to amateur radio. The award was established to run for 5 years, but was extended for another 5 years. In its final year, the Doris Cody Achievement Award has been presented to Leona Senez, S-E-N-E-Z. Senez call, it's a Canadian call sign, Victor Echo 7 Oscar, November Yankee. To quote Leona upon accepting the award, "For years before I became a ham, I was a tree climber to set up antennas and assist in to my old man, John," her husband, VE7ONX, as he soldered wires, and I must admit, complained about the noise coming through the radio and telephone. "My eventual acceptance of amateur radio has certainly given me many rich experiences and the joy of so many Clara friends." The Buckeye Bells will be celebrating their 50th anniversary in 2011. A program is being planned for the summer for past and present Buckeye Bells and their families. If you are a past member, please contact Annette Wood, KC8SQM, and let her know where you are and what you are doing now. There will be more information in upcoming Buckeye Bells newsletters. There's going to be a new website for the YL International Meet for the year 2012. Tina Clogg, VK5TMC, writes in with a website update. "I have had several complaints about the last webpage often not being up when people try to access it, so I have taken out a new web page, and hopefully this one will be better. It is an expanded version of the last one. Now, for you folks who have internet connection abilities, it's www.ylinternational2012.com. That's all one word and number. I'll say it again, www.ylinternational2012.com. Kay Craigie and 3KN, American Radio Relay League president, spoke at the ARRL Virginia State Convention in Virginia Beach in September and headed the ARRL delegation to the International Amateur Radio Union's Region 2 Conference in El Salvador in October. She'll also be speaking at the ARRL Pacific Division Convention in California. On the air, Kay reports she has qualified for her VHF-UHF Century Club Award on 6 meters from Virginia. The E-skip conditions in June were fabulous, and she worked dozens of new grids on 6 meters. Now we're talking about why L returns to Japan. Young lady K. Amen, WA0WOF, recently had what must rank as the trip of a lifetime. She lived in Okinawa from 1966 to 1972, and in October 2010 had the opportunity to return. She writes, "We did so much sightseeing in just a few days, and it was incredible to see all the changes that have occurred. There was a barbecue with some ham friends, a wonderful Okinawa International Women's Club luncheon, tours of Shuri Castle, the Peace Park, and a huge cave, shopping, check-in to a Japanese YL net, and we even went looking for my two previous homes on Okinawa, only to find that both are now gone." Well, we continue with the YL update with another bit of sad news. Victor Echo 3 Delta Tango Whiskey sadly missed YL, is now a silent key. "I'm sorry to report that Ethel Williamson, VE3DTW, suffered a stroke and soon after became a silent key. Ethel was 103 years old and recently got back into amateur radio. A local amateur radio club, Antares, recently released a video of Ethel at one of its meetings. Getty Pawlowski, VE3CJX, had this to send in about Ethel, who was a good friend of her mother's. Quoting, "Sad news, but not unexpected. She was a delightful and most interesting lady. It is the passing of an era. What memories, what experiences, what an attitude, what a life. I passed along the greetings and shared some shorter stories at her funeral. I'm blown away at how beautiful Ethel stayed all through her life, and that is not to say she didn't have any hardships. I recall after the barbecue earlier this year, she was singing ditties in brogue and dialect. She was an entertainer at heart, hence the twinkle. The casket was covered at the request of the family, but I personally would have loved to see her just one more time. In closing, with the 2011 YLOM contest behind us, I am hoping for lots of you to let me know how it went. I am hoping by the time this column appears in World Radio Online, conditions have made an improvement over early winter. Let me know what you are up to and how your start to 2011 has been. Hope to see you on the air soon as well. And for the YLs, the author is Cheryl Muir, M-U-H-R, call N0WBV. I think we'll take a few moments to look at hamfests and special events. The month of March, Findlay, Ohio, special event station W8FT from the Findlay Radio Club celebrating 90 years of existence with the special event station beginning at 1300 UTC March 20 and running until 0100 UTC March 21st. Operations will be on all the major bands, so you have to just look around or listen around. All contacts will receive a special QSO card from the club honoring the event if they are requested. Las Cruces, New Mexico. Special event station K5B Kilo 5 Bravo, operated by the Mesilla Valley Radio Club in Las Cruces, New Mexico, for the 22nd Annual Bataan Memorial Death March Marathon. The date is March 27 from 1000 Zulu to 2300 Zulu, various frequencies. Charleston, West Virginia. The ARRL-affiliated Charleston, West Virginia Hamfest will be held on Saturday, March 19, 2011, from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Coonskin Armory, 1707 Coonskin Drive in Charleston, West Virginia. Admission's $5, tables are $5. There's also VE testing, volunteer examiner testing for those aspiring to new licensing with amateur radio. That's at 12:30 p.m. Now, in the month of April, Martinez, California, special event station K6M Kilo 6 Mike. Martinez Amateur Radio Club operating April 16th from 1600 to 2300 Zulu, operating from the John Muir House National Historic Site in celebration of the 173rd birthday of John Muir, father of the U.S. National Parks System. And I have one more for April, so I'm giving you plenty of heads-up time to think about it. Raleigh, North Carolina. Special event station N4C, November 4, Charlie. It's operating from the 39th Annual Raleigh Hamfest and the ARRL North Carolina State Convention, April 3. That begins at 8 a.m. and goes to 3:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on various frequencies. Let's move along now and take a look at the Quarter Century Wireless Association commentary. That's QCWA. Looking at the QCWA and member communications, the author here is Dave Hayes, VE3JX. The Quarter Century Wireless Association uses various means to keep its members informed about the organization and events associated with it. Here's a snapshot of our various channels of communication. First, the QCWA website. A key component to this communication infrastructure is the QCWA website, http://www.qcwa.org/. It contains a variety of data and information. There are rosters, chapter listings, silent key listings, and a host of other things that make up our organization. There's a link from the homepage to the Info Center. It's like the table of contents of a book, with everything laid out in logical order. The site index is like the one you'd find at the back of a paper volume, with its references being in alphabetical order. The Info Center has been designed as the central place you would want to start from in your search for the information. For those of you who would like to know more about the structure and operation of the QCWA, including the responsibilities of the individual official positions within the organization, the QCWA Constitution and bylaws are provided online as well. The QCWA Journal is our association's quarterly print magazine. Announcements, chapter reports, reports from our president and general manager, QCWA happenings, and other articles of general interest make up its contents. The journal subscription is an integral part of U.S. membership, but it is an add-on for most international members. The reason it is optional for other countries is due to the much higher non-U.S. destination postal costs. Therefore, DX members are given the opportunity to purchase a subscription to the QCWA Journal at a rate commensurate with the delivery costs. And the Quarter Century Wireless Association has a reflector on the Internet. There is always a time lag or delay in printing current information in any magazine, such as announcements of one sort or another. How can QCWA get this time-sensitive information out to its members? Enter the QCWA Reflector. It is a way to broadcast to the QCWA audience. Any member can join the Reflector. It can also post messages to it. For example, a chapter in Florida is holding a membership meeting, and it wants to notify all those QCWA members who may be in the area at that time, but are not normally a part of its group. The group can put an announcement on the QCWA Reflector for starters. One sad but necessary announcement that recently came out on the Reflector was the passing of our beloved QCWA member Croft Taylor, Victor Echo 3, Charlie Tango. Among other positions held by Croft in the past was that of QCWA president from 2002 to 2004. Croft had a winter home in Florida, and he was en route there when he had a heart attack. He will be greatly missed by us all. Rest in peace, friend. Now, here's an overview of the governance structure of the organization. If you would like an overview of the QCWA structure without having to read and decipher other documents, here's an overview. Currently, there are 8 directors and 4 officers that are elected every 2 years by mail-in ballot. The 4 officers are standard positions for any corporation. The QCWA is a not-for-profit corporation registered as such in the United States. Those 4 officers are president, vice president, secretary, and treasurer. Now, with regard to chapter newsletters, individual chapters have established their own communications vehicles, such as regular bulletins or newsletters, covering new items of local interest. These may vary in frequency from weekly to quarterly. There's one initiative, though, that I just have to tell you about. For years, Vic Culver, called W4VIC, has put out a weekly newsletter for his home chapter, which is number 119, Tidewater, Virginia Beach, Virginia. However, this newsletter has just been expanded to include news from and for 5 QCWA chapters in the state of Virginia and the District of Columbia. Now, these are the ones that are now included. Chapter 91, that's Vic Clark, Washington, D.C. Chapter 119, Tidewater, Virginia Beach, Virginia. Chapter 137, Shenandoah Valley, Winchester, Virginia. Chapter 155, Virginia, Charlottesville, Virginia. And Chapter 202, Old Dominion, Roanoke, Virginia. And remember, this newsletter entitled Virginia QCWA News is a weekly newsletter averaging around 20 pages distributed by email as a PDF attachment. Way to go, Virginia. And thanks a lot to Vic Culver's efforts, W4VIC. I've just received the dates for the 2 QSO parties that the organization has each year. For the year 2011, the dates are April 2 and 3 for the spring QSO party, and in fall, the date is September 3 and 4 for the QCWA QSO party. The party starts at 1800 Zulu on the first date of each event and runs for 24 hours. All radio amateurs are welcome to participate. You don't have to be a QCWA member. In other words, you can find the rules and other information about this fun contest on the QCWA website. Suffice to say that QCWA has all the vehicles in place to communicate well with its members. If you were a licensed amateur 25 or more years ago and are currently licensed, no need to be continuously licensed, then consider joining those who have a similar long-lasting love of radio, the members of the Quarter Century Wireless Association. The QCWA is at least somewhat international in its membership, with its members extending into Canada, Europe, and all around the world in many diverse countries. True, most of its members live in the United States, but we can't forget our DX members. Therefore, with all directors being responsible for all members worldwide and being elected by all the membership, international members are represented by the QCWA's governance structure, as well as domestic ones. This is a very important concept, one that may not be noticed at first. There are many other areas and features associated with the Quarter Century Wireless Association website, including history, our living heritage, silent key listings with descriptions, and so on. Why not explore it when you can? The site again is www.qcwa.org. The report is signed by VE3JX, Dave Hayes. Let's move along now to the DX world, the perfect storm, veterans versus young guns on the DX ladder. The author here is Kelly Jones, November 0, Victor Delta, and 0VD. In the January and February editions of World Radio Online, I recounted my first-hand experience on what it was like to organize, arrange, and put a new country on the air as a member of the PJ4D, the exposition team to Bonaire, last October. It was truly a singular experience, quite possibly a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. However, as we advance in our DX careers, the opportunity for putting new ones in the log becomes more of a challenge. This month, I thought we might stroll down a more light-hearted road as we take a look at our pursuit of those precious DXCC entities. My longtime friend Paul Dumphy, VE1DX, has captured an fisheye look at ourselves as DXers when it comes to climbing the DX ladder. Once upon a time. One of the eternal enigmas of DXing that plagues newly minted QR peers is that big total DXers are always old DXers. It's one of the mysteries of the ages why the list stumpers, those who question if the sunspots will return next cycle, those who fret and worry about whether or not their last one will be blessed by the DXCC desk, are all members of the Quarter Century Wireless Association. It's funny, we just talked about those folks, huh? And some joined the QCWA a heck of a lot longer than a few years ago, too. Just the other day, one of the local QR peers, that's low power operators, came storming around the curve of the hill and beat his way up to see us. This one was one of the more heavy QR peers, and by the time he made it to the veranda and flopped himself down in a chair, he was puffing so hard he couldn't talk. He kept wiping the sweat from his forehead and trying to slow down his breathing. We weren't sure if the sweating and puffing was due to his mood or the exertion of his 5'5" frame hauling around all of his 230 pounds up the hill. I wonder. Finally, he turned to us and said, "What is wrong with those big gun honor roll types? The guys who have them all worked and maybe only need one or two to finish things off?" We scratched our head for a minute and looked at the QR peer. Here we were, preparing to take in one of the first warm days of spring without putting out a lot of energy, and we were now staring down the barrel of a loaded question. We'd found in the past that it is often a good idea to answer a question with another question, so we tried the standard evasion maneuver. "Did you work any new ones in the recent CQWW or ARRL contests?" We tried completely ignoring the original topic. The local was not to be deterred. "Now," he barked. Threw the switch and shifted right back onto the same track. "What's wrong with these old guys? They have everything worked, and all they try to do is discourage me. They tell me if I work anything on a DX list, it's spoon-feeding and not real DX. So I stop that. There's an IJ that only ever comes up on the DX net, but I guess I'll have to wait for a non-list one to show up, right?" We decided the non-committal poker face was the best approach. And I worked this guy signing KG4 for my first Guantanamo Bay contact. Then one of the old guys told me he really was in Georgia and that I should know that two-letter suffixes are Guantanamo and three-letter suffixes are in W4 land. So I asked him how he knew all this stuff. And he told me it was experience. "Experience," he said. "How am I supposed to get experience when I only have 132 countries? This guy has them all. He even worked that 7-0 group a few years back. When I tried to tell him that I needed around 200, he ignored me and started complaining that it took nearly 10 years for their QSO cards to be accepted by the DXCC desk. He said I should worry about real DX like that. It seems the only thing in his life worth thinking about was if the 70 would count. These old guys have too much spare time." We looked at the QRP'er for a second and said, "What else would you expect him to say? DXers always think logically. Do you think these fellows reached the honor roll without a lot of deep thinking and logic?" "Logic? What logic is there to that?" the QRP'er asked. "I need around 200, and they use every excuse they can to slow me down. Stay off lists, they say. Work them on CW, they tell me. Or it isn't really a good one. Don't count any contest QSOs toward DXCC. Don't use DX clusters, they insist. They tell me I'll never really have as good a DXCC as they do because they did it when it was hard. Now they tell me the FCC is giving away ham tickets and the DXCC program isn't checking the operations out well enough. So even if I were to make honor roll in the next 5 or 10 years, their honor roll would be better than mine, except for the 7 Oscar. They say that's real DX. I think these old guys all are out to get me." The QRP'er threw up his arms in despair. It was clear he was thinking hard. For quite a while, he didn't speak at all. Then he said in a dejected voice, "They might be right. Maybe I can never be as good as they are. I am playing the game with different rules and newer technology. But why do they have to be so condescending?" We looked at him again and said, "They aren't condescending at all. They are just looking at things from their perspective. To them, their entire DXCC worth depends on working a good 7 Oscar." The story continues here, folks, but that's enough for this one today, I think. The article for DX World is filed by Kelly Jones, N0VD. Well, what follows next is the Contest Corner. It lists all the various contests and activities in amateur radio, the frequencies, the sponsoring organizations, and whatever, but there are very many of them, and I will just give you a few of perhaps the most popular ones, if you will. Let's start with the ARRL, that's the American Radio Relay League International DX Contest. It's Zulu time, March 5 through 2400 Zulu on March 6. The bands are 160 through 10 meters, all single sideband voice. For you low power operators, that's QRP, the AGCW QRP at 1400-2000 Zulu on the 12th of March. That one's sponsored by one of the very, very popular German organizations. We also have the Idaho QSO Party at 1900 Zulu on March 12th through 1900 Zulu March 13th. This is a single sideband contest also. That's voice again. Now, on the 13th of March, also the North American Sprint. That's an RTTY, radio teletype contest. A big one here for the 1010 International Organization, it's the Mobiles. That's 0 Zulu through 2359 Zulu, the 19th of March. That's 10 meters only, single sideband and CW. This is also the month for the Straight Key Sprint, the SKCC Sprint. That's the 0-20-200 Zulu, 23 March, 160 meters through 6 meters CW, Morse code. On the 28th of March, CQ Worldwide WPX contest starts at Zulu, 27 March through 2359 Zulu, 28 March. This information is just a partial listing that appears on pages 48 and 49 of the World Radio Online for the month of March 2011. Let's take a look westward now, looking ahead and back at repeaters and VHF slant UHF relay communications. Author Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF. I'll start out by saying, in my humble opinion, neither D-Star APC025 nor any other digital voice system is going to rebuild the level of repeater use to what it used to be in years past. The revitalization or increased use of repeaters is a human problem, not a technical one. The human problem is a declining interest in VHF and UHF relay communications. The overall interest in relay communications seems to be on the decline for reasons I'll explain in this month's column. Some people are swift to blame the decline on the latest round of restructuring of the service. They are quick to report without any basis in fact that all the folks who used to be on repeaters moved to the high frequency spectrum, that's HF, using so-called paper upgrades. But the spectral loading on HF belies that. If all the folks now gone from repeaters across our nation weren't now on HF, the bands would be far more crowded than they have ever been. The manufacturers and dealers would be dancing with joy and issuing daily press releases quoting massive sales increases in HF transceivers and antenna systems. Neither has happened. I suspect that many who became hams to use repeaters as an inexpensive family-based utility communication service have moved to cellular telephones. This is because cell service is now affordable to almost every income level. In many cases, multiple smartphones that can text, access the internet, stream music, and the like are given away free of charge by the service provider just to get entire families to sign up, with smart cell phones providing at least the aura of privacy, if not the reality. I suspect a lot of former ham radio families are now there. Other repeater-only hams simply tired of the hobby in general and have moved on to other interests outside amateur radio. In theory, a significant number of new licensees reported in the FCC database, as of this reading approximating an all-time high, near 700,000, should be replacing those dropping off repeaters. And they should be showing up on the HF bands as well. Again, neither seems the case. Tune the bands, HF or VHF, you just do not hear them. Maybe those who want to operate on HF are awaiting better propagation. The upper HF bands, where DX tends to be, and where antenna sizes are reasonable, are pretty dead. At this moment, I'm monitoring 15 meters with an antique but mint Kenwood TS-520S and ground-mounted MFJ 9-foot base-loaded vertical. This area tends to be electrically quiet, and a decade ago, with the same radio and antenna, all of the bands were loaded with activity. Now I can count the number of stations on two hands. Nonetheless, activity on HF is not what would one expect with all the supposed rollover of former repeater folks to high frequency. So where are they? They are not on our repeaters or on HF, likely gone from the hobby. In my opinion, digitalization of the hobby is not going to bring them back. D-Star, APCO 25 or whatever other digital ciphering that may be introduced to amateur radio, will impact VHF and UHF emergency communications more than any other facet of the hobby. While these communications concepts might initially attract a small number of people who feel the need to be on the so-called cutting edge of technology, the rest of the rank and file will not jump on the digital bandwagon until there is enough of an established user and relay system base to make the switch over worthwhile. Likely, that base will come from those involved in emergency communications work and who see digital voice and data as a way to greatly improve their communications throughput. Once they establish the digital user base and draw significant numbers away, will there be any real impact on those still on FM? In other words, when the only way for Joe Ham to talk with his old buddy who has gone digital is to go digital himself, will Joe make the leap? For most reading this column, it's not likely to happen in our lifetime. So let's take a look at the capsule history of early repeater linking. No 70-centimeter repeaters in the 1950s, you say? How wrong you are. In reality, that's where the FM relay craze began. And if Art Gentry, W6MEP, were still alive, he would tell you so. While it took the rest of the nation a decade to catch up, by 1958, hilltops all over California were peppered with the repeating devices. Most are what we now call 70-centimeter remote base systems, but they were and are repeaters nonetheless. When I made my first visit to California in 1963, I was treated with a demonstration of a statewide 70-centimeter intertied amateur radio network that was already a half decade old, as was the nation's first repeater coordination organization, the California Amateur Relay Council. I'm told it still exists, at least on paper. Using an old tube-type Motorola trunk-mounted radio and a rotary dial telephone in his car, the ham demonstrated this repeater intertied to me in the parking lot of the old Henry Radio Store when it was still adjacent to the I-405 freeway. By dialing a set of numbers, he was able to link 450 megahertz systems the length of the state and talk to San Diego to the south as well as up north to San Francisco and Eureka, almost as if they were 30 miles away in Pasadena. He could activate 2-meter receivers and transmitters in various remote locations as well to take part in those regions' local activities. Art's own K6MYK repeater, which was a 2-meter repeater, first AM and later FM, was controlled on both 220 MHz and 70 centimeters using a fairly high-power two-way remote link base from his home in the San Fernando Valley. When Art and his wife Millie moved to Oregon, I was given the 220 MHz control receiver front end as a working souvenir. The history of repeaters on all ham bands traces back to the early experiments that Art Gentry began in the late 1940s and culminated with his establishing K6MYK in the 1950s. For that, he was awarded the Dayton Hamvention's first ever technical achievement award in the 1980s. After he passed away, his friend Bill Ahrens, N6NMC, took over the repeater and was able to get Art's M6MEP call sign transferred to a memorial club that now operates a repeater, using the M6MEP call as a tribute to the man who started it all. A film record of the early days of UHF repeater and remote base operation in California exists in the form of a pair of 16mm full-color sound motion pictures titled Once Upon a Mountain and We Cover Sagebrush. The films were shown at radio club meetings for 5 years. I first saw both at a meeting of the Palisades Amateur Radio Club of Culver City in 1972. The older of the two films has been produced in 1960, and the latter in 1962. As I write this month's column, I've been promised a copy of each on more modern DVD. Well, we thank Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, for his commentary, Looking West. Ladies and gentlemen, there's always a listing in the publication online, as well as in print, of VE examinations. As a service to our readers, World Radio Online presents a feature listing of these VE exams, times, and locations, which are sent to us. Please remember that the deadline for publication is 2 months in advance. For example, if your group is scheduling an exam for December, please have the information to us by October 1st. World Radio Online, VE Exams, 25 Newbridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. Well, this brings me just about up to time here on the Massachusetts Radio Network, the Talking Information Center with Leisure Pursuits. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. My QTH, Dartmouth, Massachusetts, 73. Have a great week. I think it's time to take a peek at Hams with Class, creative experiments to capture young people's imagination. The submitting author here is Carol Perry, WB2MGP. Many years ago, when I was a substitute teacher, going into different classrooms, sometimes several times a day, I learned the value of stockpiling interesting and exciting lesson plans to get the students' attention. As a regular teacher in the same Staten Island Middle School for nearly 30 years, I needed to have an arsenal of unique lessons to keep my students interested and involved. Now in retirement, as I visit schools across the country in my capacity as a volunteer for RCA, Radio Club of America, to lend support to schools needing help in starting or continuing radio technology programs, I always come armed with my special folder on creative experiments. Many of the incredible teachers and instructors I am involved with have terrific programs that make use of tried and true experiments to demonstrate principles of electronics, electricity, magnetism, and radio phenomena. I'm happy to share some of the more successful fun experiments that I've used through the years. As a teacher, you'll know the value of being able to pull something different out of your sleeve right before the holiday vacation, or when the kids are in a droopy mood after intensive studying for big exams, or when they're just plain bored. So have fun, and don't forget to let your own enthusiasm and love for amateur radio shine through in all that you do with the kids. The beauty of the following experiments is that they can be adapted to any age level or ability. I've done most of these with middle school age students, but also with special needs classes, elementary school kids, and high school students as well. The science that produces a lightning bolt is an electrical discharge. In the case of real lightning, the charge would go from cloud to cloud or cloud to ground. In our classroom experiment, the distance is approximately the breadth of a fingernail. As with any experimentation or lesson, you can set the mood by providing the drama. You can dim or shut off the lights for the big moment. Now, as for materials, thumbtack, aluminum foil pie plate, glue, ballpoint pen, 12-inch by 4-inch by 1-inch styrofoam block, and, of course, a wool sock. The procedure. First, push the thumbtack from the back of the pie plate through the center. Second, press the non-writing end of the pen into the tack point, secured with glue if needed. Third, quickly rub the styrofoam block with the wool sock. Next, using the pen as a handle, pick up the pie plate, not touching the plate itself. The fifth step is to put the pie plate down carefully on the styrofoam. Make sure you are holding the pen when you place the pie plate on the styrofoam. Otherwise, the excess electrons will flow undramatically from styrofoam to pie plate to finger. Now, for the drama, turn out or dim the lights. Bring your finger closer and closer to the pie plate. You should see, hear, and feel a small spark. Tell the class you've been zapped. Now, of course, the lesson learned. Rubbing the sock causes negatively charged electrons to flow from the wool to the styrofoam, giving it a negative charge. Similar charges, positive and positive for negative and negative, repel each other, so the electrons of the styrofoam cause the electrons in the pie plate to move away from the styrofoam. The electrons are willing to escape from the pi plate but cannot move through the pen because it's an insulator. They can, however, flow through the human body and jump across the small gap to your finger. Now you have to keep your hand steady. Here is a fun hands-on lesson the kids can do under adult supervision that can then be used as a game to test the students' steadiness. Materials: a metal coat hanger, a simple buzzer circuit, two lumps of electrical wires with 1.5 inches at each end stripped bare of insulation, a 2-foot-long wire, steel wool, some clay. The procedure: use steel wool to remove coating or lacquer that may cover the coat hanger. A good suggestion is to do this part of the lesson outdoors or by an open window. Untwist the coat hanger and bend it into a large U. Make several bumps or loops in the middle section of the U. Stand the hanger up by setting its ends into lumps of clay. Assemble a battery of 2D cells. Attach an electrical wire from one base of the hanger to one terminal of the buzzer. Attach another electrical wire from the other terminal of the buzzer to one of the ends of the battery. Now attach the 2-foot-long electrical wire to the other end of the battery. Bend the free end of the 2-foot-long wire into a small loop that fits around the coat hanger. The object of the game is to move the wire, the loop, along the entire path and not make contact with the wire. The lesson learned here: in order to win, you must maintain an open circuit. If your hand is not steady, the loop will make contact with the conductive hanger. Once contact is made, the circuit becomes complete and the buzzer sounds to announce your defeat. So what it all adds up to? The art of breaking up tedious technical lessons with simple experiments and demonstrations that everyone can participate in using principles learned in class is a great teaching technique. Hopefully, when the students in your class get asked the classic parental question, "What did you do in school today?" your students will answer with the word "fun" in their response. So there you have it with hams in the classroom. The author, Carol Perry, WB2, MGP. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this brings us to the conclusion of this month's reading of World Radio Online here on the Courage Handy Ham System. World Radio is published by CQ Communications Incorporated, 25 Newbridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. This recording is a production of the Courage Handy Ham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Ham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hams may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. Handy Ham is always lowercase, one word, H-A-N-D-I-H-A-M, at courage.org. Our website, www.handyham.org. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. My QTH, or geographic location, Dartmouth, Massachusetts. Well, I don't know about you, but I'm sure looking for spring this year. It's been a tough winter all over the United States, so I wish you fond memories of wintertime and better ones of the spring to come. 73.